Come on in. Come on in. The fire is hot. The water is a boiling. It's time to put somebody in this pot. Greetings, greetings, and salutations, and welcome. Welcome, Blog Talk Radio at area code 845-277-9443. Eshu is the respected elder who flogs, confronts, and uncovers fools. That one versed in mysteries uses truth to own you. He causes scattered to feed poverty, Obata Sheikh's rascals to have sacrificed. The owner of warnings is the one who is Eshu, Aboru, Aboye, Aboshishe, Ashe. May I ever reach a room. May I ever be accepted. May indeed I ever allow what we desire to come to pass. So we say Ashe and Asheo. Divine all blessed peace and love, joy and prosperity, elevation, revelations, and manifestation in this new year, 2022. You are now sitting live with the Divine Prince, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, and advisor, Elagun Oloye Hudu Obeya Bokur, sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, evolutionary, revolutionary, universally healing, and holistic from a Pan-African hoodoo world spiritualist perspective. Understanding that all is truly and indeed a blessing. If you can just see beyond the veils, for it is all just an illusion and a test and one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life cycle. This is indeed my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, my reverberation, reiteration, and it is my ever-living reality. All is a blessing is crucial to the very foundation of my inner standing, my teaching, my walk, my work along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. And indeed, it is my ultimate demonstration. And it is the place from where I begin, the place from where I realize and crystallize all my endeavors, understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine destiny. And I alone create and co-create my divine, all-blessed reality. And so it is, Ashe. Asheo, Ashe. Greetings and salutations to each and every one of you in first Monday, broadcasting Monday of 2022, January 3rd. I am always eternally grateful and appreciative for each moment, for each breath, for each opportunity to acknowledge and give thanks to, first, the Black woman is God, the Black woman is God, the Black woman is God. And because the Black woman is God, therefore I too am born God. And are given each moment, each breath, each opportunity to develop and grow further into my humanity and into my divinity as a co-creator with the God, the great God. Every prophetic teacher and leader before me has said so and has passed it down. So it's not self-created wisdom. It's not new wisdom. It is indeed universal, ancient, but universal wisdom. I am moving forward in a way in 2022 that for you will be brand new, but even for me in many ways will seem brand new. Though who I am and what I say and my cadence and sort of my rhythm doesn't deviate by much, but my ability to create content and material that continues to be both engaging and edifying, but also empowering, self-empowering, but promote a more unified sense of community as it relates to not just hoodoo, not just voodoo and conjure and New Orleans voodoo for that matter, but indeed for ATR from a more Pan-Africanist, spiritualist, globalist perspective. I want to start by noting that everyone does lists going in one year and coming into another. And so I don't necessarily broadcast lists, but I research and study lists and try to get a better understanding, if you will, as to where the world is going into each artificially created new year for us. Because many of us know, you know, celestially, cosmically, the new year is just not December 31st going into January 1st. It's sort of an artificial construct driven by Caesar, if I'm not mistaken. And so we just mark it as more of a symbolic turning, if you will, from one point of being to another. And of course, that three twos and that 1-0 that'll be on every document that we date throughout the remaining of the year. And so we still see Christianity in terms of world-dominating religion, culture, theology, mindset, thinking, and practice at 2.382 billion, 31% of the global population, claims to be and is documented as believing in, representing Christianity. That's a fine line between believing in and then representing. I know in my own spiritual journey, when often engaging people in conversation about spirituality, religion, culture, practice, even a discussion of a holiday, you quickly come to understand who is practicing, living, operating under those, you know, letters versus those who claim those letters, maybe for some other reason. And we want to get a little bit more into those other reasons as I move forward today in the show. I want to also note that Islam is still closely behind Christianity. I'm often found to be making statements such as Islam is really the side of the other side of the coin, primarily on the same deck, if you will. Hinduism, 1.2 billion, 15.1% of the world population. And then there's 1.1 billion or 15.58% of the population that claims to be secular or non-religious. And again, I find it a bit of a conflict with secular or non-religious, but you acknowledge Christmas, Easter. You acknowledge the Christianized government and system upon which we live and operate in. And then in the next case scenario, there's not often something to replace it with. There's the idea of I don't believe anything, but then there's politics, and we'll get into that. Then there's pop culture. We'll get into that, you know. So one thing I like about this particular list is secular or non-religious are included in the listing of the most dominant, populous, financially stable world religions. Secular and non-religious still appears on the list in the fourth position. In the fifth position, Buddhism at 506 million. Chinese traditional religion at 394 million. Ethnic religions, including some in separate categories that are also included on this list, 300 million or 3% of the global population. Now, African traditional religions, or ATR, 100 million or 1.2% of world religious positioning. Then there's Sikhism, Judaism, Spiritism at 14.5 million or 0.18%. Baha'i faith, Jainism, Shinto, Kao Dei, Zoroastrianism, Tenrikyo, which I believe is a Japanese religious tradition and practice, at 2 million or 0.02% of the global population. And then animism at 1.9 million or 0.02% of the global population. There's Druze, there's neo-paganism, there's Unitarian Universalism, and then last on this list is Rastafari at 0.6 million or 0.007% of world religious ideology and population. Now, you might be asking, well, why is that important? Well, it's indeed important in this discussion we're having or beginning today on speaking for, and maybe I should pose that as a question, who is speaking for Eidos? And I chose Eidos consciously, particularly I chose Eidos in that language. The controversial group Eidos divides Black Americans in the fight for economic equality. And this was a posting from last year. Reparations and the lingering racial wealth gap have been conversations largely within the Black American community. Both issues have received wider attention of late, particularly among the current crop of Democratic presidential candidates. And again, this was, I believe, January 19, 2020. So all the Democratic presidential candidates except for the former Vice President Joe Biden said that they support legislation to at least study the issue of reparations. Only Marianne Williamson, who recently ended her presidential campaign, said she fully supported reparations in the amount of $200 million to $500 billion. Biden had not endorsed any reparation legislation at that time and has not since that I am indeed aware of. Now, again, you ask, well, how does that play into my topic, which I'm now going to pose as a question? Who is speaking for Eidos? Who is speaking for the descendants of the formerly enslaved Africans, the descendants of the Middle Passage, and indeed those who are owed reparations, whether you believe you deserve them or should receive them or not, but indeed those who are due reparations. Who indeed is speaking for the voices of that Black American population? Now, that's why voices of Black America in spiritual and religion. So I have to introduce economics into the conversation. I had to introduce politics into the conversation. I have to introduce many bullet points into the conversation of who is indeed speaking for, because often who is speaking for is also who is influencing or who are the influencers. And who is speaking? There's those visual influencers, demonstration influencers who demonstrate, who lead by example. There are the pop propaganda and the pop culture imagery and what is accepted in mainstream society or culture. And mainstream society or culture applies to where you are in the world, where you're listening to this podcast from on the globe. So what applies in Afghanistan or Dubai or Saudi Arabia does not necessarily apply in Brazil or Sao Paulo, you know, or Peru, or does not necessarily apply in Gambia or South Africa or Egypt or Nigeria, does not necessarily apply in Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, you know, Chicago, New York City, California. So there are many areas that we could look at and consider in terms of a conversation about who indeed is speaking for us, and particularly as it relates to spirituality and religion. Another quick point I wanted to make is that America is one of the most religious countries on earth. America. Oh yeah, I know we can point to, you know, many severe locations in the Middle East and in other parts of the world. But indeed, America is one of the most religious countries on earth. Americans are functionally illiterate when it comes to religion. Let me say that again with clarity. America is one of the most religious countries on the face of the earth. That's my bullet point B behind Eidos in terms of who is speaking for us. So A, Eidos, American descendants of enslaved Africans. We, I am, you are, we speak for us. But B, understanding that America is one of the most religious countries on earth, also speaks, it's one of the voices that speak for many of us. And maybe your household didn't come up in the church or didn't, you know, practice a religion, but indeed you live and operate in a culture swabbed in religion, religious nuance, religious symbolism, religious undertones, hidden sometimes behind moral overtones, value-based overtones and picadillos. America is functionally illiterate when it comes to religion. And particularly the religion in which, pick an American, the religion in which they practice, but also sometimes more illiterate when it comes to the practices of other people, cultures, ethnic groups, geographic locations, and their adherences to religious tradition. And as I sort of leaked earlier in the conversation, you don't have to necessarily be, you can be the non-secular, non-religion. But if you're acknowledging holidays, if you are taking off on a holiday, if you follow a seven-day calendar, if you are operating in the Western world, you are either operating consciously in a state of religion, in denial in a state of religion, I'll even give you revolt with the state of religion. But you are responding to and operating in this country of the most religious folk on earth, who are at the same time the most illiterate about their own Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and any other tradition that might be within their peer group circle. How often do we hear, you know, I'm raised Jew, but I don't practice? How often do you hear, you know, well, my parents were Catholic, but, you know, my wife is Protestant and I'm agnostic and, you know, we sort of do our thing. But when we quietly sit and have a discussion about beliefs, politics, gender identity, sexual identity, class, status, racism, what people believe and their state in this positioning of powers of religion rings clear to the third eye that's open and the ear that's tuned in and is listening. Who speaks for Black America when it comes to spirituality and religion? Church, does the church speak for Blacks in America when it comes to spirituality and religion? How many of us know and might self-identify as someone who no longer participates in the church, no longer associates with quote-unquote religion, but your family does, your peers do, your parents do, which can sometimes be the more intense scenario. Many people disclaim religion while still adhering to particular behaviors to appease grandma, grandpa, mother, father, sister, brother, and indeed the community. It's a bit of a black card prerequisite to believe in God, to believe in a Jesus, whether he be a pale blonde Jesus or a black Afro wearing Jesus, but to believe nonetheless. Esther Rowe, good times, Michael, you know, black Jesus, you know, and so who speaks for us in our community? The church, there's a heaven and hell theory, and of course the devil, the idea that, you know, you're trying to make it in heaven or you're trying to stay out of hell. And then, of course, there's the instigator, the great instigator, the devil, who either influences and encourages you to do other than your divine self, or who, again, meets you and contracts you and seduces you into a place where you end up in this hell created primarily for the enslaved populations of the world. But motivated and led on by the black church, gained global positioning, which I have said many times on my show. I don't think Christianity as a religion would hold the positioning in the world today that it does without enslavement. Of course, without our synchronizing and appropriating in some cases and bastardizing in others and recreating a new sort of religious tradition that's now global and is headway right now by the evangelical church. But I digress. The church, the heaven and hell concept, the devil, there's control, there's the idea of evil and manipulation when we are invoking the devil from this Christianized, from the only perspective is the Christianized perspective. The idea of the devil just does not hold water in other ethnic cultural traditions throughout the world in the way it has been presented to us and particularly to our community. Hell as a final destination. I know people who still to this day have, you know, 50, 60, 70 have converted to other religions, have become agnostic, have become atheist, claim to be in control of their faculties and their mind and their consciousness, but are still having dreams about hell, which is a dream I've never had, by the way. I've had visions, but I've never had a dream of hell. These are techniques of not just the church or the ministry, but the preacher. The hook, the thing that grabs you and brings you in, and, you know, we all want to be prosperous, right? We all want to be wealthy, right? We all want our lovers back, right? We all want to be king and queen and president. You know, there's a hook that's practiced and rehearsed and manipulated, and not just in church, not just in religion, but in public speaking, in politics, in your Dr. Umar Johnsons and your Francis Cress Wilsons and, you know, eloquence and articulation and usage of language that belies another novelty that Americans have, and that is somehow we are the most educated people in the world. And Americans are not the most educated people in the world by far. Pick an ethnic group. Americans are not by far the most educated people in the world. You ask me to pick an ethnic group. The Yoruba hold the highest degrees in the U.S., the Yoruba ethnic group. The African-American Nigerian Yoruba community. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Look it up. That's a real number. After the hook, there's the storm chaser. You know, and some of you are dealing with the storm chasers, the new version of the storm chaser in Instagram, who seeks you out in your private DMs, who, you know, swears they have a message for you, the ancestors are speaking through them for you. They understand that you're going through a trial, a tribulation. You know, much like your accident chasers, you know, the attorneys who are only interested in chasing the accident, you know, for the next sale, the next point of sale. And so there's the storm chaser. I believe to some degree your former twice, how does Sony do it on The View, twice impeached ex-president was a great storm chaser and used that as a manipulative tactic in many of his public outbursts, if you can call them speeches, if at all. There's the assigner of assignments who gives you an assignment to do. And now that assignment doesn't always look like me or Dr. Phil or Iyanna Van Zandt, which might be a good thing, by the way. No, that assigner today looks like pop culture. It looks like your latest, hottest, most clickbait-worthy, you know, rapper, singer, actress, actor, reality TV, who can not only speak mandates, but can set a precedent by behavior, by language usage. And of course, when you are wealthy, rich, because you know they say you got to be rich and wealthy and doing good to have a reality show. That's what they say, and that's certainly what they make it look like. Lovely houses and mansions and cars and finery and people who seemingly have all the resources that they need. So paying the rent, keeping the lights on, keeping the heat on appears not to be of a concern for them. And then there's a lot of space for drama and dramatic flair and excessiveness and abuses in some cases. But yet these people speak for and often speak to our community, our people. And we all, you say, oh, no, that's not me, but your children, your children's friends, your children at some point, in the best case scenario, have to leave you and spend, what, 5-6 hours a day in a school with at least 30 or more other little individuals who have been greatly influenced by the preceding items and the many more that I'm going to cover momentarily. So the assigner can very well be what's the guy Samuels who's the dating so-called expert who's gone viral on TikTok and who's always insulting and berating women and particularly black women. He's an assigner of assignments. There's the hope dealer. The hope dealer also likes to show up in your DMs and Instagram and promise you opportunities of winning the lottery and getting your, you know, abusive, drug addicted, dysfunctional, financially insecure lover back through some kind of quick spell magic that's going to, you know, make things kick and pop, you know, in 48 hours or some other nonsense along those lines. The hope dealer. Politicians peddle hope. Preachers peddle hope. Then there's the messenger. And often the messenger only has to stay on message, not create a new message or truly be open to receiving a message from spirit, from the ancestors, from the creative realms, dimensional spaces, but just has to stay on message and discern what the pop culturally accepted or politically accepted, in some cases, religiously accepted message is, and then dress that part, look that part, play that role. And so we have preachers, but also politicians who are messengers who stay on the Democratic message, the Republican message, the progressive, conservative, you know, the green, you know, message. And there's not a lot of wiggle room for the details of living life on living life's terms, living reality, and living reality in the moment. And then there's the terrorist technique who indeed fears you, scares you into motivation, into belief, into maintaining a position. Some people hold on to religion that doesn't work for them anymore, primarily out of fear. And again, that's that heaven, hell, and the devil, you know, theory. So who is speaking for us? Who indeed is speaking for us? And it would be so easy to say, oh, I speak for myself. Yes, we would like to believe that we all speak so eloquently and so passionately for ourselves, considering the statistics that I've already shared. We live in one of the most religious countries in the world. We live in the most illiterate country as it relates to Americans, as it relates to not only the religion that you claim you adhere and practice, but then the religion of other people. And then we have a American or Western delusion that because we are indeed modern and Western and live in America or live in Tokyo or live in the UK, and we're somehow more advanced than other parts of the world. We even use ugly language like third world countries. I slip up on occasion and use first and second and third world terminology, often to make a point. And so who is speaking for you? If you're indeed not clear about your own positioning, and being clear about your own positioning, that doesn't just mean being clear about religion and spirituality. It absolutely includes economics, critical race theorists, politics, you know, geographic, regional politics. Depending on where you are in the world, you have your own unique set of politics that you have to navigate. Then there are the conspiracists, you know, who not only create conspiracy just out of the, you know, I'm a free thinker and I'm entitled to, you know, use some imaginative thinking, you know, as a part of my process. But there are indeed conspiracists whose sole purpose is to just confuse. Indeed, it is a noted terrorist tactic to create propaganda primarily for the role, the job of bringing about confusion, getting people to just be confused about what democracy looked like or what capitalism looks like or what, you know, communism looks like or what another country or region of the world or gender or class you know, might truly be. So we use conspiracy and conspiracy theorists sometimes in jest and humor, but in all sincerity, it does not often denote the curious thinker, but can often and more often speak to the confusionist. Not Confucius, but confusionist, the one that likes to create confusion and then keep that going. For just entertainment, we see that a great deal in social media and the internet, but in the world, it can be dangerous. In a school, it can be dangerous. Of course, there's the state and politicians that interfere with and manipulate and try and advance their own thoughts, ideas, positioning. As it relates to who is speaking to Eidos and the voice of Black America and spirituality and religion. Indeed, and I've covered numerous of times, not just today, the discussion of COINTELPRO, but we've done several episodes in the discussion of COINTELPRO. And my belief that some of the loudest, most aggressive voices that we are seeing in social media, particularly with, you know, a million followers, but you're not on TV, you don't have a SAG card, you don't have an IMDb profile, you've never made a record, you've never played a sport, but you get a million followers, you know, 2 million followers in social media, and then there are sometimes the riskier of risk takers, the riskier of voices among us are often COINTEL plants. I think, what's the word y'all using today? Ops, whose primary goal is to create sort of an illusion of shock and awe and dynamic and power and lights and whistles that is designed to draw and entice a particular mindset of person. Particularly, again, COINTELPRO, the FBI, the federal government. I've previewed a video in the 11 o'clock hour, I think it was, before we came on, about some new evidence of COINTELPRO and the FBI and their seeking information and looking into information on people who not only are accused of this sort of made-up phraseology, critical race thinking practitioners, but also, you know, Black Lives Matter and other protest groups of new, you younger millennial folk who are still young enough to believe, you know, the world is, you know, primarily still a good place, and that you're not being watched and monitored, and that you have no reason to be concerned, and it's absolutely you that should have a reason to be concerned. You're often the people who are most giving of yourselves in the world internet platform. Your secrets, your desires, your fears, your crimes, you know, you all are just too easy to give that, suggest that. We've made TikTok, you know, popular. We've made other platforms that are good for pulling the curtain back popularized. And so the access that these mechanisms of COINTELPRO and other mechanisms beyond COINTELPRO and the FBI have to not only access our community, but to influence our community and what we think. And I think sometimes the more aggressive free thinker that you believe yourself to be, you are often more influenced. And the reason I say that is because I'm a pain of identity here, you know. So you're a bit self-isolating. You don't watch TV. You don't own a television. You probably don't listen to radio unless it's talk radio. So once we get into the talk radio box, you're now decidedly one thing or the other or here. But you've got to decidedly be something, because there's not a whole lot of diversity in radio, save for public radio. But mainstream radio, network radio, iHeart Radio, Pandora even, there's not a great degree of diversity there. Try going into Pandora and looking for specific formulas of music in ATR. Bata, Santeria music, Lukumi music, ritual drumming, Haitian voodoo. And be as specific as you can, because you have to be, because there's no diversity in those commercially driven, economically driven platforms. There's no diversity to speak of there. There's the internet witches. Oh, you knew you were coming. Your black witches. You knew I was coming. Your internet witches, and of course your black witches, who are now interjecting themselves into conversations of black America and spirituality and religion, where they otherwise would not normally be or don't really have a concern for. For example, one of my favorite examples, the good old Botanica. Just because of, you know, a person owns a Botanica or is perpetrating a virtual Botanica online, doesn't mean they know anything about our traditions. Doesn't mean they respect our traditions. They respect commercialism, and they respect the dollar. They respect capitalism. They respect the free exchange of sage bundles and your $5 and $10 bills. They're not concerned about, you know, am I wiping this particular species of plant out of existence needlessly, when you can easily grow white sage in a pot in your yard, as I do and as many people that I know do. So we have to now consider, and not just your black witches, all hail and respect to the black witches, but there are other people, other groups who are not necessarily sharing their faith or their identity or their personal information, but they have shops virtually, you know, shops, botanical stores, in some cases websites, social media sites that are decidedly spiritual, and they might even promote themselves as being sort of universally spiritual. And so they'll take a little bit from each country, each region, and post that, teach that, share that from their site. But again, these are people who are often not committed to any tradition, not just that of their own, but any tradition that that they bother to truly study and understand and represent from an authentic place. I was trying to look for my list of world religions. So, you know, they could be Buddhist, they could be Hinduism, they could be Hindu, they could be, you know, Christian. And I'm talking primarily of Americans right now. But the statistics, again, show that we are deeply ignorant when it comes to understanding the religion that you claim that you practice, not to mention understanding my religion or the next person's religion, or trying to understand now Lukumi, which is on the rise. ATR is very close to the top. Animism, very close to the top, in terms of growing, developing practices. Greetings to my chat. I kind of did things a little different today, so forgive me. Greetings, S. Marie. Come on in, beloved. Welcome. Thank you so much, Chef Bougie, to you and yours. Welcome, welcome. Thank you for being a consistent participant, family member, adherent to the cause, to the tradition. Greetings, Imani Sankofa. Peace and blessings to you and yours as well, beloved. Come on in, spiritual butterfly. Hello, beloved. Just come on in. You're welcome. Greetings and salutations to you and yours, Craig Burns, and to the UK. Happy New Year's to you and yours as well. Come on in, UK. Gabby Twin, greetings, beloved. She said there needs to be a spiritual side of ADOS. I absolutely believe 100%. I need to find a way to give y'all a cookie or a weed brownie or some kind of gift when y'all ring a bell when y'all hit it, you know. There absolutely needs to be, and it's not a new argument, Gabby. When we go back to the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, civil rights movement, all of them are a part of the movement. First of all, let's be clear. When we look at the movement and we go back to the 50s, civil rights, the 60s, Black Power movement, the women's liberation movement, the gay rights movement, there's often been this sort of battle between being decidedly political, even in the nationalist category, being decidedly political, governmental, resource-oriented, without considering the resource that is nature, that is spirit, that is the ancestors, you know, that is culture and tradition. Very few places have been able to understand that often when they do, it is it becomes a tourist destination. But there absolutely needs to be a spiritual side to it. And I think another aspect of why that might be not aggressively pursued among the official ADOS recognizing community is because of the word ethnic group. Because once you start talking about ethnic group, then the argument begins all over again in terms of who should receive reparations, who should be acknowledged as a part of that group, particularly if there's going to be some money involved. Most people only care or show a lack of care in the face of reparations because it might look like some Black people might get something. And so therefore, whether they be Black or other races and ethnicities, many people now have something to say about reparations. And then, of course, you know, well, does it come out of my tax dollar? Am I now going to have to support this and ask a question and ask that question in a way that was not asked of the Jews, that was not asked of the Japanese, that was not asked of many other groups who, you know, gained the reparations. I believe just the active usage of the lettering ADOS has ever been to do with reparations. And so there's a conversation of, well, who's included in that? You know, which Africans in America are we referring to becomes sort of, you know, that discussion. But I think as long as DNA continues to evolve and become much easier to access, much more economically feasible for an individual to access, that notion of ethnic group and ethnicity, you won't be able to continue to run from that. And as I've said in previous shows, I think that could be a great benefit to the condition white supremacy and racism in the way that we now are living under and experiencing it in the world, it definitely can shift things a little bit if people are more honest and forthcoming about who they are. And not just honest, you know, in the face of dishonesty, honest in that we often have little to no knowledge or information. In this culture, that's something that the system has sought to erase, is individual nuances that could otherwise upset the system. Greetings, Shemafia Rothschild. Blessings and healing to you as well, beloved. Come on in. Welcome. Thank you, Spiritual Butterfly. Greetings to my mother, my queen mother. Happy New Year's. Happy birthday to the beloved. Yes, the people perish through the lack of knowledge. I knew someone would say it. I actually wrote that down in my notes. I just didn't verbalize it, but you did. Yes, indeed. Come on in. The Goddess Initiative. Greetings and salutations to you and yours, beloved, to you and your family, and the young child. A lot of stuff is staged, beloved, and not just on TV. Oh, my goodness. Not just on TV, because, you know, let's consider history. There was a time we didn't have TV. There was a time we didn't have radio. There was a time we didn't have internet. I know, heaven forbid, that some of you just can't imagine. Some of us in this audience have seen a time where all you had was radio. All you had was then black and white TV, you know, past, what was it, the 50s, I think. And then the internet came around the early 80s, early to the mid 80s. And so we've had to pull information, news, historically throughout the world, usually by word of mouth. Trusted word of mouth from one ear to another, one community to another. And then the availability of propaganda had to take an equal, if not more difficult, journey to reach that same audience. Today, you know, you can reach a million people, you know, with one, you know, Super Bowl advertisement. Maybe a billion people with one Super Bowl advertisement. And so the internet for sure has changed the playing field in terms of technology, accessibility. It has evened the playing field to some degree, while at the same time it is still a two-edged sword. Greetings, Mark. Join science. Leave religion, open your eyes. I can agree with that to some degree. I think religion is science. So I think there's a bit of a wordplay when we, you know, and I've talked about that before, Mark, maybe you weren't here. You know, religion has become a bad word, again, especially in the West, especially in the capitalism and democracy of the West. Religion has become really a dirty word. And I said earlier in the show today, I think it has survived here in America, particularly to the degree that it has because of enslavement. And had that whole ugly process have never happened or occurred, one, we probably would not be here. America probably would not exist in the way that it does today. But just imagine an alternate reality that in another, you know, interdimensional time and space continuum, things were, you know, different. Religion certainly would be viewed more as a science, like math or medicine, for that matter, than it does today in terms of its ability for control, wickedness, manipulation, the things that we often attribute to the hell concept and of course to the devil concept. Spiritualism as a religious practice, I'm not sure what the point of that question was, if that was to me or what that was. But in terms of our list of dominant world religions, Spiritism is listed at 14.5 million or 0.18% of the global population. Spiritism as a religion. Spiritualism, I think, is too general a word and could probably be applied globally, universally, like a science, anywhere in the universe that you plant the word, much like I think religion would be today had it not been for the Middle Passage. Greetings, Gene Williams. Come on in, beloved. Welcome to the new year, January 3rd, 2022. Come on in, Electric Vibes, Electro Vibes. Greetings and salutations to you and yours as well. Peace and blessings. Greetings, beloved. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Should I pronounce it or should I just say RPSU2B? In terms of lineage, are we the descendants of slaves or the descendants of free men or both? Does it matter which term we use from a spiritual standpoint? We're probably, in many cases, a descendant of both. We know the history in terms of free people of color arriving. Now, how safe they were became a challenge. We know there was a period where some were actually forced to move across to avoid being captured and enslaved free people. And then there's, those who maybe managed to survive, but bought their family out of slavery, for instance. So they would have been a slave-owning family, particularly in the Black Republic of Louisiana. That would have been something that would have been common. More wealthier Black families buying their enslaved relatives as slaves, but buying them out of slavery, essentially. So there's probably both. Yeah, probably both. And then it depends on demographics, and then at what point in history did they make their entryway into the country. So, yeah, both free men and enslaved, I'm sure. Yes, that mathematically and scientifically makes sense. But does it matter in terms of spiritual standpoint? I think it matters only in that as humans, we have the want to think that there was a human who showed pity, showed empathy, showed mercy on the enslaved, even within your bloodline, under the conditions of which they were able to do so from within the dynamics of that time period. And vice versa, you know, we tend to get sometimes focused in on what I call relatives and people we know. Whereas with ancestors, our great and great and great-great grandparents and all the bloodlines that would connect to them coming forward in time space, their siblings and how we interact genetically and in the DNA chain with the other members, you know, of the family, there's absolutely going to be a mix. And if we want to bring reincarnation into the picture from a spiritual standpoint, many of you have had many lives and they have not all been black or white or, you know, it's funny how we say black and white and then we say Asian, Hispanic. The whole wording changes up. We move from color usage to man-made up ethnic representations, you know, like Hispanic, like Latino. But yeah, there's a definite, when we look at it from a scientific, mathematical, DNA perspective, a mix that takes place. So a whole human, 360 degrees of consciousness, would not then create and maintain separation within themselves. And so that then spills out into how we look at culture and society. We are born individual. We are born specific. We are born, you know, with a pedigree, if you will, with a specific family and unit and bloodline and lineage that feeds we as humans how we manifest spiritual discipline, spiritual teaching, spiritual practices, but how we manifest spiritually as humans, I think is universal. I believe it's universal. Okay, Kevin Samuels. Yes, indeed. You told him you watch enough movies to know that it could have been a green screen and all these people could have been actors. Yes, indeed. Was that about Kevin Samuels or am I missing a point? Help me out, guys. You know, sometimes I'm slow on the chat. Greetings, DP. Greetings, beloved. Come on in. Jules Birch, come on in. Greetings to you as well. Thank you, Gene Williams. No one is ever late. You just in time. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm going to be here 2 or 3 hours. I just can't do that anymore. My schedule is just overwhelming. But I am going to be here at noon as frequently as possible. I'm going to jump right in and participate as much as people are open to participation. And so no one's ever late. I'm just grateful that you are here and you're present, that you can always catch me in archive, either at blogtalkradio.com/the-divine-prince. And of course at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/voodootie, VOODOOTYE. But no one is ever late to the show. I'm just grateful that you all are so consistent in your presence. Let's see. The Goddess Initiative says she was rich in all her previous lives. Okay, girl, be careful now. Yeah. You don't think you were ever impoverished in any of your lives? Or you think because you were rich in all your lives, that this one is a more of a struggle? I don't know. Which is it? spiritual beliefs absolutely seem to mirror quantum theory a great deal, Craig Burns. I'm a proponent of such. Omnipresence of God and the omnipresence of a remote viewer or psychic would be spooky action at a distance or quantum entanglement. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And you're bringing up another point that sticks out to me in my mind, just based on sort of the wording that you use here. You know, everybody, at least if we believe, you know, the internet and social media. And let me be clear, I am partly to blame for the Black Witch movement. No one's going to say that. No one's going to give me credit for that. And I'm certainly not claiming ownership of it in any way. or to be, you know, the sole, you know, leader of it, if you will. But certainly, in terms of the timing, the early 2000s, one of the first people to really bring spirituality and religion from a Black perspective, from an ATR perspective, to the Black community and to the world by way of the internet. And so many copycats came after that. Many monkey see, monkey do's came after that. Some people came and perfected the game after me. Others came and brought their own thing and sort of developed that. But there were people around. Tasha was around. Tosh, who's often here in the group, was around to sort of see that, was old enough and was around to sort of watch that happen. So this is one of the reasons why I sort of, you know, Black witches are one of my pet peeves, and particularly in terms of how we are operating at this time. We have an opportunity to truly operate and vibrate at a higher level and to do a greater work than much of what foolishness we're seeing in TikTok, Instagram. You know, the newest thing is going after, you know, successful practitioners in an attempt to sort of create an audience for yourself. And there's room for that because you all like a good freak show. You like a good reality TV show. You like mess and drama. Mess and drama is popular in a free state of internet. In the free state, internet is not free, but in a free state of exchange right now where people can say and do and be and perpetrate who and what they want to be. So in the dynamics of that, the quick desire to want to be readers in particular, Reiki in particular, spiritual in particular, in information, entangling, quantum energy, that is a scary scientific quantum metaphysical notion to quander, to think about. Because even if you're a reader, you're reading from your home, you never read in public, you never have people in your space, it's just an over-the-phone thing, it's just an 800, you are still getting entangled in other people's energy voluntarily every moment of your activity. I've talked about it in previous shows that I'm sometimes woken in the middle of the night for what appears to be no reason whatsoever, only for my phone to ring 5 minutes later, only to later have it confirmed that someone had been focusing their energy on me intently. So anytime you become a public figure, but most certainly anytime you are on TV or on video or you have facial recognition, but certainly anytime you invite, you know, people's questions, concerns, often problems, tragedies in as a reader, you're also inviting a sort of the science of quantum entanglement, which is happening anyway. We're all absorbing the stress of society anyway. Even if you don't talk to your neighbors, even if you never cross the street and examine the next building or the next block or the next house for that matter, but we all collectively felt a sense of anxiety and stress from the pandemic that was unifying in a way that we don't often get to experience globally, something that affects us globally, that causes us all to sort of empathize globally. So quantum entanglement for sure is a real thing, for sure. And so the ability for God to be omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, I get tongue-tied when I start saying all these similar sounding words. But also for us to be able to remote view, for us to be able to speak power to prayer, for us to be able to pray for somebody at a distance. All of those energies intersect with sort of this universal cosmic grid, if you will, of quantum energy. So it's very real. It's very real. Oh, wow. The multiverse is something that my mother and I and my sister Wapani and one of my cousins, Yvette, have been talking about a lot. And particularly in the last, 90 days, probably greatly motivated. Now I got the hiccups. Forgive me, Blog Talk Radio. I was drinking coffee. People who have video on now know what's going on. But people who can only hear me, Blog Talk Radio, drinking coffee, now I got the hiccups. But we've been talking about it a lot. I realize some people still don't even understand what the multiverse is, or how it works or will continue to work. And I say continue to work because it's already a reality. It's already a real thing. Some of the children, the youngsters, particularly gamers, have been operating sort of in the multiverse already to some degree for some years. So if you're in your virtual reality game, you want a particular weapon, or you need transportation, or, last time I played a virtual reality game was on Xbox, the original Xbox. And I think that time it was, what was the game I had? Because I only had one or two games. This game had many versions in different locations. I think my version was Las Vegas. But you basically could, jack people for their cars, find weapons, find prizes, go in and out of buildings, drive across the golf course, virtual reality game. And then you buy, thank you, Electro Vibes, Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, I had the Grand Theft Auto. That was the last game that I played and owned was the original Grand Theft Auto Xbox. So that predates Hurricane Katrina. So we were already entering the multiverse. What was just beginning even then with the Xbox was the ability to then hook that up to your internet. And at that time, you could hook it up to Yahoo 360. There were a plethora of chat rooms. I don't know what happened to all the chat rooms. Remember chat room? There were a plethora of chat rooms that you could go in and out of. Well, maybe part of what happened was predators, young people being preyed upon in the chat rooms. And from my understanding, these sorts of things can still go on probably to a greater degree in these newer platforms, in these newer games. But I'm just kind of speaking nostalgically right now in terms of the multiverse. And so, you might want to buy a car. You might want to buy clothing now. And so now we have Bitcoin. And so Bitcoin has made that transition between real money and world money, between monopoly money and virtual world money easier. And so you now can buy using your Bitcoin. But at some point, usually the Bitcoin either originated as real money or can sort of be used now to buy real things. And so that line has also blurred. So they've been blurring the line, leading us up to the multiverse for some time. I think the multiverse is just a new language for the Jetson era. I've been wanting and anticipating and talking about the Jetson era since I was born, since the 60s. And so we were promised a lot of things with the Jetsons as a cartoon back in that day. The Jetsons was on. My Favorite Martian was on. Mr. Ed, the Talking Horse, was on TV. Bewitched was just coming out now in black and white. The Munsters was on TV. So we were promised a whole lot of metaphysical, quantum, scientific sci-fi stuff, you know, that's just now really coming to full fruition. Even Star Trek and your controllers and the flip phone and the cell phone evolution. And so we've been working our way through the basic foundations of the multiverse for some time. It's just now, quote unquote, a thing. And particularly with the idea now, people buying real estate in the multiverse, which is something I've been looking into, and creating sort of a reality, much like we've all had to experience, some would even call it endure, during this Zoom era of 2020 and 2021, during the pandemic where kids are learning from home. Many kids are now learning from home again because of the newest variant. Many work at home people, much more work at home people now than it was 20 years ago. Many people hadn't even considered working home as a real thing until the pandemic. And so now that has integrated into the system in terms of what it's going to make and build the multiverse. And so our ability now to buy and sell, trade, entertain, be entertained, invite into your virtual space. I'm using live cam right now. I'm just now figuring out that I could be using virtual backgrounds in Zoom while I do this podcast that would allow for the creation of different space and different ideas of reality and what reality is. And if I had to, where our newscasters really are, if we aren't paying great detail. But you certainly don't expect your friend, your mom, grandma, your employer to sort of be faking an environment. But the pandemic and Zoom created a reality where, you know, that's happening now. That's now a thing. And then TikTok has made using many tricks and applications easier to access. So we now have virtual realities that we can create, that we can invite other people in. I've been playing around with some virtual realities where I can actually invite other people into this space. You know, I could be in that chair and someone else could be sitting here and others could be sort of positioned around. Let's use our imagination. So we could sell body soap and incense and herbs through your virtual reality using your virtual money. But then that could be FedEx, UPS, you know, globally and at some point cosmically to, you know, to the next planet or the next location. In real time. So the multiverse is just an extension of something that we were promised almost 60 years ago. A new was coming. We could even take it back, you know, without digressing a whole lot to that great radio broadcast where many Americans were tricked into believing we were being invaded by aliens. So the idea of moving into another time, space, dimensional sphere is something that has to start long before the consciousness of the people who are living it in the moment. Because sometimes when you're in the moment, you don't quite see the beginning and the ending of a thing with a great deal of clarity. People will go back 300 years from now, 400 years from now, and look at us and this time from a very different perspective than even we can, because they'll have new knowledge and new information and new science and new worlds of understanding to pull from. So the, you know, like all technology is a blessing and a curse. Like all technology is a little bit scary and a little bit exciting, you know, at the same time. I think every generation thinks the new technology is the mark of the beast. The new technology is the end of the world. The new technology is the Illuminati, you know, or secret orders, you know. And I guess in some alternate reality, intra-dimensional space, it is for some people. It's that profound. It's that earth-shattering. It's that life-changing. Some people just don't want to give up their albums and their 45s and their LPs. Some people just don't want to give up their CDs and their DVDs, you know, and ultimately your video game cartridges, you know. And now some people are just not ready to give up their external hard drives and embrace the cloud, you know, because the cloud can be scary for some people. You know, and so the technology, just like consciousness, continues to evolve. And so Craig Burns, yeah, there's definitely quantum metaphysics, spiritual development, technological development. There is a quantum entanglement factor there. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Let's see. It's almost 1:30. Okay. Great timing. Great timing. I'm going to check my chat here. If you have questions, of course, if you're on the phone line to 845-277-9143, I'm always grateful for my listening callers. Just push the number one if you have a question or a comment. I have people who listen from their workspace. Everyone in their office listens to this show. And so they can always press the one and call in. I'm always grateful for my global audience. Of course, the U.S., Canada, the U.K., Australia, and Hong Kong are right now my top listening audiences. But I'm certainly grateful for Venezuela. I'm certainly grateful for Brazil. I'm grateful for Argentina. You know, they got Nazis still in Argentina, but they listen to us. Okay. I'm grateful for Russia, Sweden, Finland, the Norway. These are the countries from where we are listened to often daily. France, Germany, the Netherlands, Poland, the Ukraine, Italy, Austria, Spain, Portugal. I often forget about Portugal because it's so small on this, on my map. Forgive me, Portugal. Portugal is often here every day. Turkey is often here every day. Iran is here every day. The Pakistan is here every day. India is here every day. Bangladesh is here every day. Indonesia listens every day. Malaysia listens every day. The Philippines. Of course, Australia, Indonesia, we said, South Africa, Dominican Republic, Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria, Ghana. We lost some listeners in Cameroon. I don't know what's going on in Cameroon. I hope they're not having a political issue. I can often tell by the internet access. Another example of that is southern Indonesia, the furthest tip. Is that Papua New Guinea? The northern half of the island has internet. The southern half of the island does not. And so we never have listeners in that southernmost tip of Indonesia. We never have listeners there. And there's a clean line that separates the northern part of that island from the southern tip. So sometimes it's about technology and internet and people's ability to sort of tap into to listen to us and where we are. No, I don't think I saw your post about people stuck in upper chakras. but lower chakras who are a mess. Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably one of those people. Certainly have struggled with just being human and all the things that come with being human and adulting. While I spend most of my time in the spirit with relative ease, no stress, I'd much rather battle demons and jinn and angels and spirits than humanity. So I'm probably guilty. We can feel we're being observed. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And we are being observed. We are. And I think part of the wiring, Craig Burns, for humans is designed to sort of limit, if not prevent, that. Some of you are just excessive masturbators. Just the knowledge that your ancestors, or spirit for that matter, can just enter in and out of your space and observe that. Does that make you uncomfortable? Does that make you nervous? Are you able to turn that on or off in your head? How does that work? How does that work? How does that play into your human experience? And so remote viewers, psychics. Now, psychics and indeed remote viewers to some degree have rules. Now, a remote viewer can go in and view a location. Egregious activity involving harm to other people, men, women, children. And so we want to locate that victim, that terrorist, that kidnapper, that bunker. And so the remote viewer has to cross into certain protocols in the space continuum, if you will, to sort of see into that. Now the psychic reader, I don't know, just often, more often than not, in most cases, just can't go into your private business. Just can't follow you into the bathroom, the bedroom, whatever, you know. But really has to have permission to only examine what is pertinent to the request. Now, sometimes during that process, I'm told a lot of stuff about people that I never say, that I never mention, that I never question, that I never bring up. But as I've matured spiritually, I've understood its place in helping to better address the need, the concern, the request of the client. So there are certain things about a client's past that they don't say, maybe not necessarily they don't want me to know, but they have a hard time saying that. And so I'm now gifted that so that I'm able to then address said topic with some sense of compassion. With some sense of compassion. And often my language will change and the client will say, you know, yes, you're right, or some confirmation will leak from my mouth, and then they will ultimately give sort of permission, if you will, to sort of go into what was shown during that reading process for clarity. Yeah, predators messed things up. There was a lot that went on that shut down those chat rooms. I realize how fine I am now in my chat. Yeah, I'm interested in digital real estate. It's a reality, so there's no question it's a reality. But how that works, how to get into it, and the cost. Oh, my God, I've seen some stuff that's just outrageous. When you consider virtual space, But it's not outrageous when you consider what will be bought, sold, traded, experienced in that space, and sort of the numbers. So those are some of the things that we have to consider as we move in. And let your vibes contact me. Send me an email. Let me know how that goes, what you come across, what you find. On your journey into virtual real estate. Electric Vibe says 99% of his teaching work is done on Zoom. Yet Zoom is a new thing for me, just like doing this video podcast is a new thing. I've only been doing video podcasts for, help me out, God's Initiative, 2 years. Did I start in January of 2020 or did I start in January of 2019? I think it was January 2020. Yeah, I think I started podcasting video January of 2020. So this is relatively new to me. Zoom was absolutely new to me. Now, just making videos was not new, but even elevating that to another level, has definitely transformed expeditiously in the last 5 years, for sure. And I think that's not a bad idea. No more traditional classrooms. That's not necessarily a bad idea. And it depends on what you're teaching and how much demonstration and activity, you know, which still can be remedied virtually. Oprah does virtual interviews where the people are there virtually. Yeah, I don't blame her. Yeah, more and more of us are discovering the world of virtual reality via machines like the Oculus Quest. I have never heard of it. So let me write that down. Oculus Quest. I've seen it and had no idea what it was. Okay. Yeah, I've seen that on TikTok. It's an older black man, 86 years old, I think, and he's using it. Some people have had some serious mishaps, have run into walls in their house while using it. I just had no idea what it was called. I knew it was virtual reality. I just had no idea what it was or what it was called. Gene Williams says they're all homeschooling. I'm glad to hear that. These new variants are no joke. Yeah, Gene, they've been a problem for me. As a teenage runaway, child runaway on the street, I feel my chakras got separated at a very young age. I mean, first you're growing up in a house with such abuse and trauma, rape, molestation, bastardization, indoctrination, et cetera. So my chakras were literally being ripped apart at the heart. At the fourth chakra. And so my voice developed strength. My third eye developed strength. My chakra, my crown chakra developed strength. My eighth chakras and above began to really develop probably prematurely and expeditiously compared to, you know, others around me. And, of course, what was happening at the first, second, and the third. First, second, and third was blocked from the beginning. Didn't like sports from birth. Didn't like balls. Didn't like cars and trucks a whole lot. My grandmama bought them, you know, when I was a toddler, too young to really understand, but they were not anything I was really impressed with. I was more impressed with more cognitive things, more emotional things, more creative things. Didn't take gym at school, you know, dodgeball was probably the last and the worst thing I ever did in school. And after the seventh grade, after the sixth grade, and because of evangelical Christianity and religion, I was required to take physical education in a co-ed setting anymore in a public school by religious letter. So I've been cut off. First, second, and third, or limited in the first, second, and third chakras from a child. It's a condition that I totally get. And I am definitely a mental health, I want to say something new here, proponent, certainly wellness-oriented in terms of my own mental health, but certainly pre-diagnosed with imbalances of mental health, which, yes, the Goddess Initiative separated at the fourth chakra. Was never very physical as a younger person. I'm much more physical now as an older person. I'm probably much more likely to fight now than I was in my 20s. I'm much more likely to fix something now than in my 20s. I'm much more likely to be, you know, household repairman now than I was in my 20s, or repair person, I should say, because it's non-binary, gender-specific. But just I've seen that as I grow and mature and continue to heal, I can see it with such a clarity now that I could not see it before and certainly couldn't voice it or find words for it. Yeah, you have to start at the root. I mean, you have to. That's why my ancestral work in divination starts at the table. It has to start at the floor. I've never said that before out loud either. It has to start at the floor. You have to start at the ground. Thank you, Jean Williams. That would be confirmation that I'm doing the right thing. I said at the top of the show I was doing something new, though it might not appear like it, but I am. And maybe it's working. Maybe it's working. Yes. And there was a time when I slept a lot. And sometimes sleeping a lot is not just, you know, about depression or hormones or melatonin, but sometimes it's also about people who are not taking time in their waking state to consciously go into the spirit realm. And so you now have to do it in the sleeping state, in a trance state. Yeah, it's something that has to be continually balanced and rebalanced. Think of the earth. The earth is in constant motion. It's not just spinning, it's tilting and rocking at the same time. So not only am I spinning around 360 degrees, but I'm also wobbling at the same time. So there's no such thing as, you know, perpetual, constant, unchallengeable balance. It is human and godlike to be challenged and to then rebalance. Thank you kindly, Jean Williams. I certainly am grateful for that. I'm going to be wrapping up soon. We got about 15 minutes. Okay, so it was January 2020. Thank you for that. Yeah, so I've been podcasting like this relatively new. Your daughter wouldn't. My goodness. You have to come on one day and tell us that story. Yeah, the new technology is always extremely expensive. In the beginning, think about how much CD players cost when they first came out. Think about how much a Walkman cost in 1979, 1980, and everybody wanted one. And in less than, I don't know, 3 years, everybody had one, and then you couldn't get rid of them. You go in the grocery store, you go into Walmart. In fact, I think that's how Walgreens and Walmart really came about. It was so much of that stuff that they had to get rid of it. The batteries. Remember when they had to get rid of all the batteries, all the D batteries, the C batteries, the double A, the triple A. Now they still sell those because we still have items that use those. But remember, there was a time that the price fell when the technology for powering devices changed, and you could recharge and you could replug in things. So the new technologies are always extremely expensive in the beginning. One, because it's a new technology. Two, because of, you know, popularity and demand. And I think three, because they're still often actively designing, redesigning, renewing, you know, sort of how they make things. And so in time, the prices do then fall when the technology sort of forces them to. You know, I forgot I had an appointment. Yeah, and so I'm going to have to move forward. Probably should have already ended the show, but I'm sure all will be well. Yes, thank you kindly. I'm certainly grateful to and for each and every one of you for being such consistent participants, listeners to the podcast, to the show. For my godchildren, for my initiates, for my students, it's a bit of an open classroom. It's a bit of an opportunity for us to see and hopefully hear each other. But it's also an opportunity for me to invite the new to come in and don't remain isolated in your interest. Don't continue to remain isolated in your curiosity. We must find a way to rebuild and reconnect our community away from the systems that no longer serve us, but in a way that will continue to feed and support our present reality, but also the realities that we will be living and are beginning to live as we continue to move into the future. We could very well have, you know, reasonably affordable flying cars in 3 to 5 years, really easily. We could be living in a whole nother universe in 3 to 5 years, whether it be a pandemic, technology, some extraterrestrial demonstration that's just undeniable and global. But our reality is no longer moving at a slow and a low pace. And not just the digital age, but the atomic age, the cosmic age, a time of great expansion of knowledge, of consciousness, of truth, of wisdom, but also of self-empowerment. So I don't think there's any greater time for ATR. I don't think there's any greater time for quantum metaphysics and spirituality. I don't think there's any greater time for the present. I'm here for you at all 24/7. Some of you know and understand what that means. I'm always by appointment and by email at divineprince@houseofthedivineprince.com. I do phone and virtual and certainly in-house appointments as well, but by appointment only, by email to schedule the appointment only. All is a blessing. I look forward to connecting with each and every one of you again in the new year as we move forward. All is a blessing. Peace and love, joy and prosperity.
Congo Square.
Thank you kindly.
The Olmos Indians. The Olmos Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. A sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. The Olmos Indians prepared this place for us. Centuries before our arrival. Congo Square, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. And as the colonizers came, our hosts, the Omus Indians, they pushed aside our hosts. The colonizers came and pushed aside our hosts and introduced us in chains. And by the late 1700s, we somehow, recognizing the sacredness of Les Places de Congo, we somehow, and the how of our somehow persuasive methodologies is not clear at this moment. The how is not clear. How our persuasive methodologies worked is not clear at this moment, but nevertheless, even as slaves, we crafted and created a space where we could be free to be we. And thusly we countered the sacrilegiousness of the French, giving great homage to our ancestors as well as giving praise and thanks to our red-blooded brothers and sisters. This is an oral libation toast to Congo Square, to Native Americans, to our ancestors who made a circle out of a square and gave us a way to stay ourselves, save ourselves from the transformatory ugliness of America, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life. Which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life and celebrates death with crosses and crosses, double and triple crosses, the middle passage, the first cross, Christianity, the double cross, and capitalism, the ultimate triple coup de grace cross of our captivity. But the terror of crosses notwithstanding, we sang. We beat, we be, we was and is. Hail Congo Square, Congo, Congo Square. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us, inside the beat of us. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us until we are ready to release them into a world that we recreate, a world heralded by the beat, be, beat, being, beating, being of black heart drums. Heart beat, heart beat, heart be at this place be heart be we beating place in new world space beating being in place in new world preserving our ancient pace our dance is the God walk our music the God talk first thing we do let's get together. Circle ourselves into community. No beginning, no end. Connected together and singing, ringing, singing in a ring. Second, let's be original, aboriginal. Be what we were before we became what we are. Be Bambula dance, be Banza music, and sing song words which have no English translation. Third, let us remember. Let us remember never to forget, even when we can't remember the specifics. We must retain the essentials. Let us remember never to forget. Even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. The bounce, the blood, flow, the feel, the spirit, grow, energy, must retain and pass on the essential us-ness that others want to dissipate, whip out of us.
Whoa!
But no matter. No matter how much of us they prohibit. No matter how much of us they prohibit. Deep inside us is us. Deep inside us is us. Remains us inside and needs only the beat to set us free. The beat to free us. It is morning, a sun day, a feel without shade, but dark, dark with the people black of us in various shades, eclipsing the sun with our elegance. We are centuries later now, and still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to beat, to be. We are centuries later now, and still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to beat, to be. Beat Congo Square. Be Congo Square. Beat, be. Beat, be. Beat,
so
Congo Square. Be Congo Square. Remember.